Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Matinaire on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I'm sitting in for Jane Matinaire, who is currently on vacation, vacating it up, and we hope she is relaxing and having a good time. You can always get in touch with us by calling the number or texting the number. It's the same number no matter what, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can also join us on the live stream, which is on Facebook, YouTube, and the place, Calvin, that we still call Twitter. Even though it's a dumpster fire, we still respect its roots and call it Twitter, right?
Well, not only us. I think 95% of its user base.
Yes, exactly. That voice you hear is the board lord, the man himself, Calvin Butenhoff. He is taking care of the show, making sure we are running smoothly. We got a great show, a busy show for you coming up. At 10:33, we're going to bring on new coworker, Calvin, our new coworker, Dan Schaefer, who's not only the founder of the multi-award winning website, The Recombobulation Area, but also is now the political director of Civic Media. He will be joining us probably to overview what happened this week as far as our, you know, our acquisition of the Recombobulation Area and him becoming our political director, but also talking about the CNN interview that they did with vice president and presidential nominee Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz. So we'll be talking to him about that at 10:33. At 11 o'clock, we are going to talk about bands and music and things like that. So I want you to get in your brain some thoughts on, you know, there was the big announcement this week that Oasis, after I think 15 years, is reuniting. Because Calvin, as we all know, nothing will break a feud better between two brothers than a huge, huge paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to make so much money. I think they're playing 12 nights at one venue. It might be Wembley Stadium. Like, if you can check that for me, I'd love that. But they're going to be playing a lot of shows, and people are very excited about that. And we want to know, who's a band that you want to see reunite? Maybe a band you say, hey, just, you know what, don't reunite. And talking about our favorite records and how they influenced us. And then 11:33, it's Labor Day weekend. We're starting that off right now, and we want to know, what are your plans? Where are you going? What are your Labor Day memories? Do you have trips that you go on? Are you going to celebrate and you know, lift up the spirit of the union? Are you a union member? Do you have fond memories of that as well? You can always text those thoughts in to us, 855-752-4842, or you can call us the same number, 855-75-CIVIC. But yeah, we got ourselves a fun show, a Friday show, a holiday show, if you will. But first, I want to just make sure I check in with my bud, Calvin. Calvin, how you doing?
Ready for the weekend, but I'm doing good.
You're always ready for the weekend.
You know, that's what everyone tells me, but I think it's a good mindset to have.
I agree. I mean, we work hard here. We work really hard. We work on shows. We do things. We do a lot of work. We make sure that everything is in its right place and going forward, so you all hear our voices. But at the end of the week, on Friday, I feel like we've earned that time to sit back and kick our legs up. I unfortunately don't get as much of that because I work on the weekends as well, but I've chosen the life of a worker bee. But I'm glad that, Calvin, you're going to take some time to yourself. I'm going to guess, if I had to guess in a million years, Calvin, you're going to hang out, you're going to read, and you're going to relax. Am I right or am I wrong?
You are correct. I'm probably going to play video games too.
I forgot. Oh! I thought I knew you. I thought I knew you, my friend. Yeah, so we hope that you're doing the same. Or, hey, if you're going out fishing, I talked to Brittany Berlow yesterday, and she said she's going to be camping and pontooning and stand-up wakeboarding, I think it was called. That just sounds like a lot of work for what it's called a vacation. So either way, get in touch with us. Let us know. Drop a comment in the live stream. Comment by texting or calling us. But we'll talk about that at 11:33 today. But let's start with the news. And for the first time ever since announcing her running back about a month and a half ago, Vice President Kamala Harris, along with Governor Tim Walz, who are now both the nominees for the Democratic Party, sat down with Dana Bash from CNN to have an interview. It was fine. It was good. It was a good interview. I felt like it was strong. Some people thought it was a train wreck. Some thought she was terrible. I don't know what interview they were watching. I don't think that it was something that was so star-spangled awesome that, you know, it's going to go down in the annals of TV history, but it was a solid interview. She gave her points. Governor Walz gave her points. Dana Bash asked good questions, I felt. And now all those people who like to call us or rant on the internet. Why won't she sit down with an interview? Why won't she sit down for an interview? Now they can be quiet and they'll never talk again. Right, Calvin?
Yeah, I mean, I will admit I did not watch the interview and yeah. I actually haven't even really seen any clips of it.
I watched it. It was fine. It was about a half an hour. You can see it on CNN. They have it split into nice three pieces. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't a monumental moment in television history. It was an interview with a candidate who wants to be president. And I get that. And it was probably very crafted. And I'm sure that, you know, they were aware that of you know, I don't want to say they were aware of the questions, but they were definitely, you know, they knew where they were going to take this interview. It's a basic get to know you interview. Tell your stories, put your stump speech into a more palatable sit down moment. And I think that's exactly what the Harris campaign achieved. And it was fine and good, and watch it if you'd like. But I wanted to talk about something specifically, though. And that was at the beginning of the interview, Dana Bash asked Vice President Harris what she would do on day one. And when I was watching that, Kelvin, it started just kind of going into my brain. I'm like, okay, well, that's a very simple place to start and an important place to start too. But it made me start to think about what Donald Trump also said when he was interviewed by Sean Hannity about his day one. And I want to just play for you the clip of Vice President Harris being asked by Dana, even she messes that name up in the interview, Dana Bash from CNN. Calvin, can you play that clip from the CNN interview from last night?
People are ready to turn the page on that.
So what would you do day one?
Day one, it's going to be about, one, implementing my plan for what I call an opportunity economy. I've already laid out a number of proposals in that regard, which include what we're going to do to bring down the cost of everyday goods, what we're going to do to invest in America's small businesses, what we're going to do to invest in families, for example, extending the child tax credit to $6,000 for families for the first year of their child's life to help them buy a car seat, to help them buy baby clothes, a crib. There's the work that we're going to do that is about investing in the American family around affordable housing, a big issue in our country right now. So there are a number of things on day one.
What about you?
Well, I'm excited about this agenda, too. As I said, the idea of...
And, I mean, Calvin, am I wrong? Very simple answer. You know, it's a stump speech answer. It's what she's going to be saying on the campaign trail for the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we've been hearing she won't do an interview. She won't do an interview. And Trump has been doing interviews, I guess. And I think there's a clear contrast between this interview and the interviews Trump's given on Fox News. It's a direct answer. There's policy points. She didn't go after Trump. She didn't call Trump's policies a disaster. She didn't say Trump's policies are going to end our country. It was a direct, well thought out, non-rambling response. It might not be as in depth as people would like or as fleshed out as people would like, but at the end of the day, it's a TV interview and she has to appeal to as many people as she can.
And she talked about, you know, she wants to work to help save and help the middle class. And there are people out there, and I understand this, it's a politician. I mean, like, well, that's just a basic, you know, who doesn't say that? You're absolutely right. All the politicians always want to talk about the middle class, small business, teachers, firefighters, all the heroes, all those things. And she did what she was supposed to do. But I want to play for you now a contrasting thought on Donald Trump's day one styles, what he wants to get finished or what he wants to get accomplished on day one when he sat down a few months ago with Sean Hannity. So just take a listen to this clip and try to get the differences between the two. I want to challenge everyone. What are the differences between the tone between Vice President Harris and Donald Trump? Go ahead and play that second clip.
Under no circumstances, you are promising America tonight, you would never abuse power as retribution against anybody.
Except for day one.
Except
Look,
for?
He's going crazy. Except for day one.
Meaning?
I want to close the border and I want to drill.
That's
drill,
not
a,
that's
drill.
That's not.
Oh, no.
That's not retribution.
I got. I'm going to be, you know, he keeps.
Nope.
He says, you're not going to be a dictator, are you? I said, no. Other than day one, we're closing the border and we're drilling, drilling, drilling. After that.
Okay, so let's just a couple of things about that. First of all, I don't know about you, Calvin. I don't know how many interviews you've watched with presidential candidates. I've watched quite a few. I've never heard anyone who wants the highest office in the land being asked the question, are you going to or are you not going to abuse your power when you get back into office? That just seems, Calvin, to me like an odd question to ask somebody, right?
Well, I mean, before Donald Trump, we never had a president who wouldn't answer if they'd respect the peaceful transfer of power. And like, we never would have thought that that's a question that needs to be asked of a presidential nominee either. But he is unprecedented in his behavior and his supporters don't care.
Yeah, no. And they want to see him abuse his power. That's everything about it. I saw a flag by my mother-in-law's house that said Trump 2024, the revenge tour. So that's what it's all about. It's like if you ask, if you have a child and you say to the child, hey, you're not going to eat that piece of cake while we're gone, right? Because that cake is for your aunt. And they're like, no, because you think they might eat that cake. So if you're going to ask somebody if or if not they're going to abuse their power when they get into office, you are afraid they're going to, in fact, abuse their power as the president of the United States of America. And also, two other things. First of all, drill, baby, drill. As you listened to our interview with Mr. Global from last week, Matt Randolph, you can see this in other interview, or I'm sorry, in other TikToks he has posted. This country is doing fine at drilling on our land. We're doing great. It's not something that is a problem. It's not, we are very, very capable of drilling on our own land. Joe Biden is a person who offered many contracts to people to do that. In fact, there are some that's not being taken because people aren't drilling as much as we thought they could. But we could drill, baby, drill. And we are drill, baby, drilling. So that's not even a fact. And we're going to run to a break. And I want to go over the second point about his statement as far as closing the border, which is something he cannot shut up about. So we're going to take a small break. We are going to grab some water and a snack, and we're going to come back. We hope you do the same. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close, friends. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach. You are listening to our show. It is wonderful to have you here. It's Friday morning. It is 20 after 10, and we are coming to you live from WAUK, 540 AM, and you are listening to a show on the Civic Media Radio Network, which you can stay up to date with all the latest news in Wisconsin by subscribing to the Civic Media Digest. Go to civicmedia.us/email, and you'll get top podcasts from around the civic media programs in our world, and they got news commentary, and we got our civic media team, and you can learn what's going on across the state on our network right in your inbox each week. So go to civicmedia.us/email and sign up for our digest. The second point I wanted to make, we were talking about earlier, we were talking about the interview with Vice President Harris on CNN with Governor Tim Walz. And we were talking about the fact that it was fine. It was a decent interview. I didn't think it was mind-blowing. I think Kamala, of course, held her own because she's very, very good at politicking, and that's important. We did get some texts coming in saying they weren't happy with the question asking. They weren't happy with Dana Bash. I know some people still hold a lot of, there's still a lot of beef with people how CNN handled the debate between Joe Biden and former President Trump. But, you know, I feel like Dana Bash was doing her job. She did it. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz did their job, and that was it. It was an interview. But I wanted to focus, and we were focusing on the day one tone of each candidate. And Kamala Harris, very simple. She wants to build the middle class. She wants to make things more affordable. She wants to make sure that we are, building our country from all ends, not just from the rich one percenters, but to everyone, giving opportunity. She refers to it as an opportunity economy. And then we played a clip of Donald Trump on being asked by Sean Hannity on Fox News about his day one intense. And Calvin, can you play the Donald Trump clip again, please?
No circumstances. You are promising America tonight. You would never abuse power as retribution against anybody.
Except for day one.
Except
Look,
what?
He's going crazy. Except for day one.
Meaning?
I want to close the border and I want to drill.
That's
drill,
not
a,
that's
drill.
That's not oh, no. that's not retribution. I got
I'm going to be you know, he keeps we love this guy. He says you're not going to be a dictator, are you? I said no, other than day one. We're closing the border and we're drilling. After that I'm not a dictator.
So like I said, that is ominous tone from a scary question, because like I said, you don't ask somebody about this type of topic unless you think they are going to do it, Calvin. And he wants retribution. He wants revenge. He wants his naysayers to be punished, whether it's to be embarrassed or, in my opinion, some of them to be jailed. I don't know. Am I wrong, Calvin?
I mean, based off how he answers the question and based how he's behaved in the past, I believe you're right. I'm not sure if he is capable of thinking that far ahead, if I'm being completely honest, but he certainly has enemies that are people he views as enemies. And if he is put in a position where he is able to do something about those enemies, I'm fairly confident he would do it.
Yeah. And I, you know, we had a discussion with, and I, her name is blanking with me, Andra Watkins, who was talking to us. She was a former evangelical Christian. And her point was basically that he is just, you know, the puppet, and they have people behind him who want to instill their plans for this country as far as how they want to see it run. You know, it's a very, I don't even want to call it a traditional way of looking at it. It's just a very patriarchal, man in charge, woman at home, religion is one religion and you believe in religion or you're not an American or worse. And, you know, whether we're talking about Project 2025, no matter how much people want to disavow that, it exists, it's there, they put it out. And I don't care if Donald Trump says he doesn't know about it. He is lying. He has mentioned hundreds of times in that book. So the other, and I was looking at the points he was saying as far as drill, baby, drill. And we've got comments on the live stream that's talking about this as far as the oil and energy. And we had a comment from Jake, formerly of LP, and I do not know what LP is. Maybe it's record, but I don't know. Take Back America from whom? Also, the U.S. is producing a record amount of oil and gasoline right now and using less gas. Gas prices are down, and he is right. We talked to Mr. Global about this, Matt Randolph, and you can listen to that interview from last week, Monday. Going to go back and listen to an episode as a podcast. So drill, baby, drill is just a statement that makes people excited, that gets them all riled up and having, you know, they're like, yes, we got to drill for oil. Well, we are, and that's it. So he can't really make us drill more. And the other point, too, is close the border. Close the border. Well, I have a question for you, Mr. Former President, convicted felon. We had a chance to put together a great border bill last year or this year, and it had support on both sides of the aisle. People wanted this to happen on both sides of the aisle. And then you called up GOP leadership in Washington and said, no, kill this bill. If you vote on this and it gets done, Biden gets to take the win and I can't campaign on it anymore. And that to me just says how little anyone really keeps up with his policies, which they aren't policies. They're just words he's throwing at us. And some people get really excited and people like me are like, is that all you have, Calvin?
I mean, it's just his ability, and I don't know if it's a conscious ability or if it's born out of ignorance, but he talks out the both sides of his mouth. He's all big on inflation. But his two biggest policies, any economist worth their salt would tell you, are inflationary. Tariffs on China will be inflationary, and a mass deportation would be inflationary.
Mm-hmm. And let's take it one step further. If you want your Handmaid's Tale, where women are doing the work at home barefoot and pregnant, that's also inflationary because the work and the jobs they have will now be vacated. And are there enough men to take those jobs? So all of these goals they have consequences that will absolutely work us over as Americans. I don't understand how people buy it, but they do, and whatever. But he is a vengeful man who, you don't stay a dictator on day one and then be like, all right, day two, who wants to have a party? He is a man who will get into office and absolutely destroy this country with billionaires behind to do so. We have only have a couple minutes left. Brendan from New Jersey is on the line. Brendan, what say you, friend?
I just want to say that, I think Calvin hit right on the head. He talks out of both sides of his mouth. He's a liar. Every other word that comes out of his mouth is a lie. So, so he can say whatever he wants. First he wants national abortion ban. Then he doesn't want it because he sees that he's losing voters. He changes like the wind, the direction of the wind. So who really cares what he says? He's a slave to the corporate masters that fund him money, including those that own all these corporate media places. And let's face it, CNN has just become Fox Lite, as far as I'm concerned. MSNBC may be too far to the left for a lot of people. There's no middle of the ground. There's nobody just reading the news anymore.
Yeah.
So Brendan, let's wipe that off the table.
I don't disagree with you. I think people who call the New York Times and the Washington Post liberal rags aren't reading those articles either. But, I think you're making a lot of great points there, my friend. Thank you so much, Brendan, for calling in. We're going to take another pause here, and we're going to invite Mr. Dan Schaefer, political director of Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulationary, to the show. We're going to be talking about the CNN interview with Vice President Harris and Governor Tim Walz, as well as recapping the news of us bringing Dan as our co-workers. Don't go anywhere. Stay close. Stay hydrated. Stay amazing. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who's currently on vacation. She's vacating. She's relaxing. She'll be back a week from Monday. But you got me right now. You got Calvin on the board. And you also have, wait for it, the new political editor of Civic Media, Dan Schaefer. Welcome to the show, my friend, for another edition of the Recombobulation Area, for which you are also the founder.
Good morning, Greg. What an introduction. What an introduction.
I'm so still excited. I'm still excited and thrilled. Seriously, man. I'm in my car today and I'm like, Dan's coming on the show. All right. How are you doing, coworkers?
We're coworkers.
Calvin, we're coworkers.
We have messaged or tweeted or whatever the word coworkers at each other this week. Bet the over on that one.
It's a lot, but you know what? This is our moment. We're taking our time to shine, and we're going to. So,
absolutely.
Dan is, of course, the founder of the multi-award-winning Recombobulationary, which you can subscribe to right now. But he is also the political editor of Civic Media. We're going to get more into that. You know, you came on the show early this week, and you've been making your way around all the shows in the Civic Media universe, or as I call it, the CMU. And we'll discuss that more a little bit later, but we want to expand on what we were talking about just now about the CNN interview that was done with Vice President Kamala Harris, who is now the Democratic nominee for president, as well as Governor Tim Walz on CNN with Dana Bash. And also we're going to discuss a little bit about the fact that Donald Trump was actually in town in La Crosse in a city hall, a town hall format. I should not city hall, a town hall format. Dan, what were your takeaways, honestly, on the CNN interview?
Yeah, so I was part of Civic Media's special coverage last night of the Trump town hall, so I didn't get a chance to watch the Kamala Harris interview live, but I got a chance to watch it later in the evening. And, I thought it was okay. I thought that the format, the type of questions that were asked, it was just kind of this fire hose of, can you react to this media or campaign controversy? And I thought for a first interview with how much the national media has been clamoring to have this sit down interview with Harris, it just seemed kind of a little bit too much of this insular type of conversation that is about these controversies that are happening on cable news, these controversies that are happening in you know, online spheres, in the campaign and whatever it is. And it didn't really, to me, get to some of the big issues at hand in this election in a lot of ways. You know, talking about Kamala Harris flip-flopping a position on fracking from something that she said in the Democratic primary in 2019 or 2020 or whenever it was that she said it. Like, you know, sure, let's investigate these claims. Let's make sure we're on the up and up and everything. But for this high profile of an interview, for the focus to be on these types of questions, it just felt a little bit lacking. It felt like it kind of missed its, you know, it missed the forest for the trees, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I said it was fine. You know, it wasn't, as I put out, someone called it a train wreck. I don't think it was a train wreck by any stretch of the imagination, but it definitely wasn't fireworks and dragons. And I don't think anyone should expect those things. It was the first sit-down interview with a candidate to make her pitch to the country who get CNN. And now that, you know, you say that, and I think, but yeah, you're right. It was a series of questions on inside, I don't want to say inside jokes as far as jokes, but like inside stories. Like, if you weren't watching these things, you're not going to know what's going on. And I, you know, when she asked the question, what do you say to Donald Trump making the casting dispersions on your cultural heritage? And she, I did like the answer, like, yep, that's, what are you going to expect? And it was like, next question, move on. Like, even I think she felt there are more important things to talk about than a 78-year-old man making a complete idiot of himself in front of black journalists questioning the blackness of the candidate. So, you know, I thought that was interesting because she's like, yeah, moving on. What else you got? So,
yeah, I thought that was a really good answer. And I think, you know, maybe it's just because I spent last week at the DNC and was at, I saw Kamala Harris speak twice last week, both in Milwaukee at that rally and at the DNC. So it's just like everything she said throughout the interview, it didn't seem all that surprising either. You know, it just felt like what I've been hearing her say for the last week. So it you know, and I think she delivered it well. I think there was one moment that I think did really stand out to me over the course of that interview, because it was one of the moments, few rare moments there that felt more unscripted, which was when she was talking about the end of a certain decade in American politics. I thought that was kind of interesting. And you know, one of the big themes of, you know, the campaign rallies and at the DNC was just the refrain of, we're not going back.
Yes.
And that emerging as, and I think this, you know, new chapter for America, whatever it might be. And I thought that was really interesting. I think Walls talked about that too. I'm pulling up the transcript here for what she said. And hold on one second here. She was talking about turning the page on the last decade of, quote, what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies. And then Dana Bash said, you know, within the last decade, the last 3.5 years have been part of your administration. And then Harris says this, and I'm quoting, I'm talking about an era that started about a decade ago where there is some suggestion, warped, I believe it to be, that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on you beat down instead of where I believe most Americans are, which is to believe that the true measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you lift up. That's what's at stake as much as any other detail that we could discuss in this election. I think, you know, for all the just kind of reacting to campaign stuff that was in this interview, I thought that was the moment that really stood out to me the most. And I think is really indicative of where this campaign is and what it is and how it's connecting with people, because I think people really are tired of the Trump era of politics and want to turn the page. And I think the way that came up is, and it seemed like part of a little bit more unscripted than the rest of the interview. And I think that is an idea I'm really interested in. I think there are a lot of people who are just worn down and tired by the way our discourse has been over the past decade since Trump came down that golden escalator. And I think the opportunity to turn the page from that and to have a new leader on the stage in America, that's a really attractive message And I think that's a really interesting point that Vice President Harris made in that interview.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Civic Media political editor, I'm never going to get tired of saying that, and founder of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer, who's here every Friday at 10:30. We're talking about the interview with Vice President Harris, who is now the GOP, I'm sorry, GOP, good Lord, the Democratic nominee for president, as well as Governor Tim Walz of Michigan, Minnesota. I'm drinking sparkly water and my brain's a flutter right now, but I don't think you're wrong there, Dan, in your taking in that information as far as the message they're trying to put out, because it's what they've been doing since the announcement happened and Tim Walz was brought on the ticket, which is that we're going to bring this sense of, hey, we got to work together. And as a Midwesterner, you're a Midwesterner, we're all, you know, the three of us, Calvin as well, Midwesterners, there is a sense of, hey, man, how can I help you? Like, do you need something? Can I mow your lawn? Can I help you with your tire? Can I help, you know, what can I do to help lift you up? Because when I lift you up, we all get lifted up. And I think Kamala also brings a very unique tone to that because there's, you know, it's a lawyerish tone. She's very, when she's listening to those questions, she's answering them as in a very, lawyer way. But I still found it inspiring because, yeah, 4 years in office, 4 years after complaining about the election, you get beaten down by like, oh, God, do we have to listen to someone talk about how the election was stolen, even though it wasn't, and how all your enemies are terrible? I mean, it makes you, honestly, I don't know about you, but Dan, but it makes you question your belief on taking in joy. You're like, is this what this feels like?
Right. Well, and I think that's part of it, too. It's been so long since there's been this kind of energy around a candidate. And yes, you can write it off as this being the honeymoon period with somebody, and it's exciting. But you know, we saw a Gallup poll that was released yesterday that enthusiasm among Democrats for voting is as high as it's been since 2008.
Yeah.
And now I don't think what's happening with Kamala Harris is anything like what happened with Barack Obama in 2008. I'm still one of those hopey, changey millennial liberals who has very fond memories about that particular campaign. But I also think that our politics have just been sucked into the vortex of Trump since 2015. And I think there's part of this is just to say, okay, if we have Kamala Harris as sworn in as president in January 2025, that will put an end to a certain era for politics in this country. And I think there's frustrations with, you know, the way that the reaction to Trump has been on the Democratic side too, where it's always just about like, well, we're running against Trump all the time. We're running against the MAGA extremism. But I think this is part of what I think we heard at the DNC a lot last week too, and just embracing the joy of this campaign and embracing the possibility of what's ahead. And I think that throughout the, you know, talking about fracking or talking about Tim Walz's record or talking about whatever it was that may be a campaign controversy that does warrant questions. I'm not saying it doesn't warrant questions. I'm just saying that like what I think was the biggest takeaway from this was that opportunity to turn the page. And I think that is going to be a big part of the message for the next 60 some days. How close are we now?
I think 67.
67 days until the election. And I think that's going to be a big part of the message. And I think that's going to be something that does resonate with voters because, I don't think there's a huge appetite, even with people who may say that, you know, the Trump years were better for me economically or whatever it might be. I think there's an appetite for something different in this country. We didn't want the rerun of Biden and Trump. We didn't want that. And I think the opportunity with Harris is so great and so significant, and that there's the harnessing that excitement, harnessing that joy, and talking about turning the page on a really difficult last decade for political discourse in this country. It would be a really attractive option.
I think that's an important distinction to make too, Dan, as far as we are, it's not just Trump. We want to say, you know, all right, you've had your time. Go golf and be an elder statesman of your party. But also it was time for Joe Biden, I think, to step down as well. And I wasn't totally for it. I'm not going to lie. I was against the idea because I felt mid-campaign, this is going to be disastrous. But, you know, the energy I saw at the DNC was that you're seeing for the first time, millennials and Gen Z starting to be a part of, if not controlling the narrative of their party and saying, this is where we want to go. And this is where we're going to continue. And you can come with us. Please come with us, because we're going to have a good time. We're going to spread a great message, and we're going to try to take care of all Americans. And it really solidified for me with the DNC saying, yeah, okay, yeah, it's time to close the door and finish the chapters on, you know, we had Clinton running for president twice. We have Biden running for president when he probably shouldn't have, and Trump just not sticking around and just not leaving the party when he should have. And I think this just brings more of a joyful message.
I think there was that quote from Nikki Haley from earlier this year that I think I often return to. She said, whichever party gets rid of their octogenarian candidate first is going to win.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like the two candidates were not representative of where the country is. And I think the country is in a place right now where they just want to turn the page on the pandemic and the Trump era and whatever it might be. And are just ready for something new and just like hated the option for this rerun. And I think the Harris being on the ticket and everything that's happened since then is just a reflection of the appetite for change.
Exactly. We're going to keep the conversation going. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, as well as our political editor here at Civic Media. We're going to talk about the town hall in La Crosse where former President Donald Trump was appearing. Don't go anywhere. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Recombobulate me. I need you to recombobulate me. Won't somebody recombobulate me? Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently on vacation, vacating, relaxing. We wish her the best and can't wait to see her again next week from Monday. That's when she'll be back. We are sitting here having a discussion in the Recombobulation Area with the founder of the multi-award-winning Recombobulation Area, as well as the brand new political editor of Civic Media, Mr. Dan Schaefer, a.k.a. my coworker. Dan,
Coworker.
We're going to get t-shirts. There will be a podcast, Coworkers, with Dan and Greg and Cal. Boom, you're on board whether you like it or not, Cal. You were covering, as a part of Civic Media's extended coverage last night, the town hall of Donald Trump in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And you know, they are making their plays for this state. We are the pretty girl at the ball, and they want to make sure that they can get our votes. And what did Donald Trump bring to that event? Did he bring discourse, listening, and cogent answers?
I think we know the answer to that, don't we, Greg?
Womp, womp.
Yeah. So the Trump town hall, it was kind of a strange event when, you know, kind of thinking the big picture on it. They, you know, absolutely packed arena, tons of people there. And I think, you know, having covered a lot of stuff in recent weeks and, you know, political events and whatnot, the town hall is obviously different from a speech. And I think Donald Trump maybe himself was prepared for a speech, because one of the first things he said when he took the stage, he's like, oh, my staff was telling me that, you know, this is a town hall and not a speech. And I was ready to give you the greatest speech in the history of speeches and blah, 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 blah. Typical Trump stuff. but yeah, the town hall format didn't really serve him that well. You know, obviously these questions don't really seem like ones that are just coming from, you know, just any random swing voter. And when your moderator is not, you know, not a journalist, but somebody who just endorsed Donald Trump, Tulsi Gabbard was the moderator for the town hall. It was just kind of bizarre. And I also think it was short. You know, Trump events go long.
Yeah.
I was at the RNC for the longest convention speech in recent convention history when Trump went on for 90 plus minutes for his convention speech in Milwaukee. And this was, you know, there were really about like four or five questions. The event was supposed to start at 6, didn't start till after 7, and was done before 8. So, you know, and
oh my gosh.
They've said today that that they wanted to get people out of there because of weather. And, you know, I saw some of the reporters, Emily Fannin from CBS 58 was tweeting something about how it was like a terrible drive back, from the event and all of that. So it does seem like that was certainly a factor. But it was a really unfocused event. And I think, you know, frankly, the Trump campaign kind of missed an opportunity at the beginning of that, because Tulsi Gabbard started the event by talking about telling a personal story about some challenges that she had faced with infertility treatments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was some news yesterday out of the Trump campaign where they wanted, you know, insurance to pay for IVF treatments and whatever it might be, not to mention that Republicans have voted against expanding healthcare access for IVF treatments over and over and over and over and over again. So we'll just worth noting there. But I think she was talking about that in a sense, and it made me think that they were going for a moment like what we saw with Tim Walz and his son at the DNC last week, where there was this genuine moment in talking about their family struggles with infertility and the joy of, they're talking about his son, Gus, and his daughter, Hope. And when I was on the convention floor for that speech with Tim Walz, there were people like, you know, wiping tears away from their eyes. And it was a really emotional moment. And Gabbard telling her personal story set up an opportunity to have an emotional moment. But the person she was talking to was Donald Trump. And Donald Trump just went right into the normal Donald Trump riffing on stuff. Like, he's talking about no taxes on tips, and he's talking about this, and he's talking about illegal immigrants. And instead of having this moment when Gabbard is sharing this personal story and they could really set up an opportunity to talk about something and an issue that they're clearly losing on, I have to think Republicans are thinking they missed an opportunity there with that exchange.
I have to imagine that at this point, Republicans just expect to miss opportunities because they're never going to. I mean, this is something that I've been talking about for a while. I've heard other people discuss as well. He is never going to become the president. He is going to be himself. And that himself is always the guy who wants to be the center of attention. He's the guy who wants to, I mean, and it's sad too. He's a guy who just wants to be loved, and he's never going to be loved by his parents because they're gone. So he just talks about whatever at length. And then we have to say, like, all right, you've been talking for 90 minutes, dude, wrap it up. I mean, he has had dozens upon dozens of opportunities to become presidential, and he has squandered all of them. And so the fact that, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, and my heart goes out for her in a struggle, and, you know, I don't know anything about that world, but I have to understand that the pain and the hope you have that can be dashed is something that is unlike anything else. So I guess for me, when the man who wants to run this country follows a story like that and can't show basic empathy towards someone or the people who go through it, that says a lot about the guy who wants the job. When you have to ask the question, are you going to abuse your power when you get in office? That says a lot about the guy. And it just seems, and tell me, you've won more awards than I have for journalism, Dan. I have to imagine that the GOP higher-ups have to just say, we need to get through this. If they win, whatever. But if they lose, they have to understand, yeah, that's, we put our chips on this guy, and this is what we got.
And I also think, you know, kind of with that, it was interesting to see the lack of the fact that there were not other Republicans on stage with him last night, too. Eric Hovde and Ron Johnson were reportedly at a fundraiser in Orange County, California.
Yep.
Last night, instead of being on stage, you know, usually at these events, too, you have, you know, the Republican candidates or, you know, members of Congress, whatever it might be, you know, kind of speaking in advance. And there was none of that either. You know, yeah. Derek Van Orden didn't take the stage. You didn't have, like, you know, local electeds from La Crosse area, whatever it might be. We didn't have any of that either. So it was just kind of this brief kind of rambling town hall event where Trump couldn't stay on message, and it ended rather early.
Well, we're not going to end it early right now. We're just going to say so long for now at this moment, because Dan, we're going to see you next week, Friday, on the Recombobulation Area, as we have you every Friday at 10:33. Dan, welcome to Civic Media. We're so happy to have you. Co-worker and friend, founder of the Recombobulation Area. Subscribe today and stick around. We're going to be coming back talking about your favorite records, your favorite reunited bands. Are you excited about Oasis? I know Calvin is. Don't go anywhere. Dan's excited. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close. You're awesome.